Welcome to Food for Thought. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau from Compassionate Cooks. I founded Compassionate Cooks to empower people to make informed food choices and to debunk myths about vegetarianism and animal rights. To learn more, join our mailing list and check out all the different things we do, please visit our website, www.compassionatecooks.com. First of all, I'd like to thank today's sponsor, Arbonne International. That's A-R-B-O-N-N-E, a 27-year-old skincare company. All of their products are Swiss-formulated and American-made, botanically-based, hypoallergenic, pH-correct. Plus, they are all formulated without any mineral oils, dyes, chemical fragrances, or animal products. Being vegan.org approved, it means that not only is their entire line free of animal products, but neither their finished products nor any ingredients are or ever have been tested on animals. They are pediatrician and dermatologist tested, and everything I've used by them is really, really fantastic. I really just love what they're doing, and I just love that they're so proud of their vegan stance. They have an extensive line of products for women, for men, and for babies, as well as a sun care system, acne lotions, aromatherapy, and nutritional supplements. To purchase their products, get more information, or order samples, I encourage you to visit www.karencunningham.myarbonne.com. That's Karen Cunningham, Cunningham.myarbonne.com, or email Karen at karencunningham@myarbonne.com. And it gets even better. Not only are they sponsoring today's podcast episode, but the first 10 emails that Karen receives that have Compassionate Cooks in the subject line, those people will receive a fabulous free gift from Arbonne. So drop Karen a line and tell her that you heard about Arbonne International from Compassionate Cooks. Again, that's Karen Cunningham at myarbonne.com. Thank you very much for your podcast sponsorship, Arbonne. And to all of the podcast subscribers, I thank you as well. I can't stress enough how important it is to subscribe to this podcast. iTunes uses some algorithm to determine who to feature based on new subscribers. So do pass this podcast on to friends. We have a really solid base of listeners, a really solid base of subscribers. But we need more subscribers, obviously, to pass on this information, but also to really just keep spreading the word and get iTunes to recognize us. So pass the podcast on to your friends, your coworkers, your family members, and encourage them to listen and subscribe. If you're able to sponsor this podcast, also you can do so by visiting CompassionateCooks.com, click on Support Our Podcast, and thank you all very much for whatever you can do to help, whether it's a one-time contribution or a monthly contribution. I'm very, very grateful. Today, I want to talk about fish, more specifically how our consumption of fish leads to the demise of other fish, of cetaceans, which are whales, dolphins, and porpoises, how our consumption of fish leads to the demise of birds and also ecosystems. At the time of this writing, I've already produced 41 episodes of this podcast, and I can't believe it's taken me this long to get to this topic. It's not because it's not important. It's because there's so much to say about the larger topic of veganism and animal rights. There's also much to say about the human consumption of aquatic animals, and we'll return to various aspects of this topic again and again. But for now, let's focus on what is called bycatch, otherwise known as incidental catch. Now, for me, like for many people, fish were the last animals I stopped eating. First were land animals, though hoofed animals did come before birds. Then aquatic animals and their secretions, you know, like fish eggs when I ate sushi. And then the secretions from land animals, which are chickens' eggs and cow's milk. So at the time, I was still eating fish, and mind you, I was an animal advocate at the time, totally missing the boat on my role in the suffering of aquatic animals. I remember starting a conversation with my now husband, who joined me on this journey when we met over 12 years ago, and I wanted to explore why we, not just us specifically, but humans in general, could eat certain animals and be appalled at eating others. Was it the cute factor? Was it size? Was it their similarity to or lack thereof to humans? Was it our ability to have relationships or not have relationships with them? What was it that enabled us to eat some and not eat others? And as David and I talked about this, we tried to come up with a reason. We tried to kind of figure this out and tried to come up with a reason we were able to justify eating aquatic animals, but not eating land animals, insofar as we were even doing this consciously. And every avenue we went down, we just couldn't do it. We just couldn't find a good enough reason. Excuses, yes. Justifications, yes. Solid reasons that were good enough to make us feel comfortable eating them, no. And I remember saying, damn, well, we can't keep eating them. I mean, that's it. I just can't do it. And so we stopped and fish were out. That was it. I mentioned in another episode that one of my blocks, even though I was eating other fish, was lobster. I couldn't eat lobster because I could see the whole body and had to break the body myself in order to eat it. I couldn't do it. I could see it for what it was. You know, a body, a head, I could see the eyes, I could see the legs. And now when I think back to eating shrimp, the idea of just biting into their entire body, because that's what we did, right? I mean, I broke the body with my teeth and chewed up their body. It's repulsive to me now. I hate thinking about it, but I did it. I did it for a long time. And now I'm just glad I don't do it anymore. So we have a lot to talk about, and I thought we would start with one of the aspects of fishing that we don't think about a lot, we don't hear about a lot, and that's the inevitable, the inherent part of commercial fishing, which is called bycatch. Now, I had been planning on covering this topic for a long time, but it was an email that I received that inspired me to put this at the top of the queue. I'll just read you a bit of the email. It's from a gentleman named Carl who lives in Arizona. First and foremost, thank you. Thank you for all the work you do, the dedication you have, and the love you give. This is Carl writing to me. Thank you, Carl. I love your podcast and check daily to see if a new episode has been published. When the world gets to be too much for me to handle, I listen to your podcast to help recover the faith I have lost. Since you have given me support in knowing I am not alone, I thought I would return the favor. And this favor from Carl was a beautiful, gorgeous photograph of Carl releasing a hawk back into the wild that he had helped rehabilitate through a wildlife rehabilitation organization he volunteers with. It was just beautiful. Anyway, he goes on. Since in every podcast you ask about topic suggestions, I will mention something that was one of the hardest things for me personally to give up: sushi. I thought I would never give up fish until I saw a video podcast by Greenpeace called Thanks for All the Fish, which shows a legal fishing boat as they pull up their catch. In the podcast, they show how many endangered animals they legally pull up and kill. This podcast, above all other arguments, changed my mind about eating fish. We often hear the quote that 10 billion animals are killed for human consumption in the U.S. alone. But it's more accurate to say 10 billion land animals are killed for human consumption every year in the U.S. alone. Otherwise, we're just disregarding the billions of aquatic animals killed for the same purpose: human consumption, human appetites. Although the number of aquatic animals killed for consumption in the U.S. goes unreported, annual estimates are more than 17 billion in the U.S. alone. And sport fishing, angling, kills another 245 million animals annually. So basically, we're talking about over 27 billion animals, both land and aquatic, being killed every year in the U.S. so humans can eat them. And we're not talking about survival here. We're talking about appetite. And these numbers don't count the millions of aquatic animals being killed as incidental catch, bycatch. Bycatch refers to unintended or unwanted animals caught by the fishing industry. It's estimated that bycatch-related mortality is causing population declines in 13 out of the 44 species of marine mammals that are suffering high death rates from human activities. Commercial fishers use a number of techniques for ensnaring animals, for ensnaring fish, from setting miles of line and baited hooks, these are called long lines, to catch animals such as sharks, swordfish, tuna, other fish, to using large nets to catch schools of fish. And these large nets are towed underwater by what are called trawlers. A trawler is a fishing vessel designed for the purpose of operating a trawl, a type of fishing net that's dragged along the bottom of the sea or sometimes just above the bottom at a specified depth. A single pass of a trawl removes up to 20% of the seafloor fauna and flora, the animal life and plant life, respectively. And the fisheries with the highest level of bycatch are shrimp fisheries. 80 to 90% of a catch may consist of marine species other than the shrimp being targeted. I just want to make sure you heard that. 80 to 90% of the animals caught in these nets that are targeting shrimp and prawns are actually non-target animals. They're bycatch, 80 to 90%. Shrimp are bottom dwellers, which is why trawling nets are used to remove them from the ocean. Since even jumbo shrimp are really small, the nets used to catch the shrimp are very fine, which means these nets scoop up all the animals, all the life found on the ocean's floor. According to a 2003 U.S. News and World Report article on fishing and its detrimental effects on the oceans of the world, every pound of shrimp that's caught results in the killing of 10 pounds of other marine life. According to the Worldwide Fund for Nature, in the Gulf of Thailand, it can be 14 pounds of bycatch per pound of shrimp. Now, a lot of the dead bycatch is made up of tiny animals that look people don't have emotional attachments to. You know, they may not be cute like baby seals or dolphins, but they contribute to the ocean's biodiversity and they have a right to live. They have a right to be there as well. And that's what a lot of the bycatch is made up of. The other thing to consider is that the dredging along the ocean floor also breaks up coral and the habitats of bottom dwellers. And because the same areas are dredged again and again, it's not like these habitats and inhabitants have time to recover before being destroyed again. So if you consider yourself an environmentalist, and most people do, it's something to consider. Fish populations, communities, ecosystems are being destroyed so we could have our fish, so we could have shrimp cocktail. And I used to eat that. I used to eat shrimp cocktail. Now, bycatch is often discarded back into the ocean, already dead or dying. Many are half alive and die slow, painful, unnecessary deaths. Trawl nets in general and shrimp trawls in particular, where the discard may be 90% of the catch, have been identified as sources of mortality for many species of concern, including endangered animals and cetaceans such as whales, dolphins, and porpoises. Sea turtles, already endangered, have been killed by the thousands in shrimp trawl nets. Another way to put this is anywhere between 6.8 million and 27 million tons of fish could be being discarded each year. It's hard to get exact numbers, but part of the problem is that we tend to have a pretty myopic vision. We may be looking at the one fish on our plate or the five shrimp in our seafood salad, but countless numbers of animals were dredged up and killed for the individuals we see on our own plates. Now, we've been talking primarily about the bycatch caused by trawling nets and shrimp nets, but there are other commercial fishing methods that also result in bycatch. Nets tend to kill cetaceans. Again, cetaceans are dolphins, porpoises, and whales. And longline fishing kills birds, for instance. As for the first group, the nets, an estimated 300,000 cetaceans die as bycatch each year because they're unable to escape when they're caught in the nets. So you may not think codfish are particularly cute, but most people get pretty emotional about whales, dolphins, and porpoises. So if we don't consider the cod, if we don't consider the salmon, if we don't consider the swordfish, perhaps we can consider the animals for whom we do have sympathy. It's been estimated that a staggering 100 million sharks and rays are caught and discarded each year. Tuna fisheries, which in the past had high dolphin bycatch levels, are still responsible for the death of many, many sharks. Now, sharks don't inspire warm, cuddly feelings either, and they're perceived as a great menace to humans. In reality, sharks typically attack fewer than 100 people per year, killing fewer than 20. And it's not because they're evil, which is how they're depicted. It's because they think we're prey. Because, as noted by the International Shark Attack File, human population growth means more people in the water every year. Continued human population growth means more people in the water every year. And continued pollution means less habitable water for the sharks. In addition to the millions of shark, by the way, that we kill each year as bycatch, we kill between 26 and 73 million sharks for their fins. I'm sure you've heard of shark fin soup. It's considered a quote-unquote delicacy in China. And it's common practice. It is common practice to just catch the sharks, cut off their fins, throw their dismembered bodies back into the ocean. The thought of that is so disturbing to me. So even if you might not want to cuddle up next to a shark, it doesn't mean they deserve what we do to them. They're victims of our appetites as well. I mentioned birds being killed in long lines, and I just wanted to follow up on that. Birds dive for the bait planted on these long fishing lines, and they swallow the bait along with the hook. They're pulled under the water and they drown. Around 100,000 albatrosses are killed by longline fisheries every year, particularly where tuna are fished. And because of this, many species are facing extinction. This is very prevalent in the waters off of Chile, where sea bass is aggressively hunted by boats towing 50-mile longlines. 50 miles long. 50 miles long. The public became aware of the problems of bycatch in the 1980s. You've heard of this, when campaigns were led against tuna companies for harming and killing dolphins when tuna were the targets. The relationship between dolphins and tuna is that yellowfin tuna follow and school beneath dolphins. So fishing fleets would look for dolphins on the surface, herd them, and encircle them, and set out the nets to catch the tuna and ensnare the dolphins at the same time. An estimated 7 million dolphins have been killed by this fishing method over the past four decades. In 1986, the International Marine Mammal Project organized a campaign, including a consumer boycott of tuna, in order to urge U.S. tuna companies to end the practice of intentionally chasing and netting dolphins, and to adopt dolphin-safe fishing practices to prevent the drowning of dolphins in tuna nets. Dolphins are mammals. They don't have gills, so they drown while they're stuck in the nets underwater. There are other standards that a company must adhere to in order to label their tuna dolphin safe, but it's worth noting that just because it says dolphin safe or dolphin friendly, it doesn't mean that dolphins were not killed in the production of a particular tin of tuna. It just means the fleet which caught the tuna didn't specifically target a pod of dolphins. And then again, dolphin-safe tuna isn't exactly tuna-safe tuna. Though the numbers are down since new techniques are used to catch tuna. It was 400,000 dolphins that were killed annually in the 1960s, 100,000 that were killed annually in the 1980s, and several thousand dolphins are still killed every year to satisfy our appetites for tuna. Dolphins are social, playful, intelligent animals, and they're also killed as bycatch in nets targeting trout, according to a 2003 BBC story by Alex Kirby called Nets Kill 800 Cetaceans a Day. You can find this story on the internet. Nets kill 800 cetaceans a day. More than 800 dolphins, porpoises, and whales die every day as they get tangled in fishing nets. Again, I mentioned before that number is about 300,000 every year. Turtles are also common victims. Sea turtles are killed by the thousands. It's estimated that more than 20,000 sea turtles die each year after getting hooked on long lines. Six of the seven species of marine turtles are listed as endangered or critically endangered, and the outlook is increasingly grim. In the Pacific, leatherbacks are heading for extinction fast. And in the Mediterranean, green turtle numbers have plummeted. Though pollution and disease contribute to this, the nets and long lines of fishing fleets play a major role in their demise. According to Duke University, who recently conducted a global assessment of this problem, more than 250,000 loggerhead and 60,000 leatherback turtles are snared each year by commercial longline fishing, and tens of thousands die, I mentioned. The authors estimated that longline fleets from 40 countries set about 1.4 billion hooks in the studied year of 2000, the equivalent of about 3.8 million hooks each day. again, long lines are fishing lines that can stretch for 40 miles and dangle thousands of individually baited hooks. They're set at optimal depths and times to catch tuna and swordfish, shark, and other fish. And according to the data studied, the turtles most often die not by drowning, but by some kind of injury related to hooking or entangling. So it's a pretty gruesome death. And we're talking about bycatch, but I want to talk about a couple byproducts of the fishing industry. Again, we will cover fish themselves in another episode, but we're talking about kind of the byproducts, the bycatch of the fishing industry. And I want to talk about the brutal killing of baby seals that has been happening in Canada. And I'm sure you've heard about it. If you haven't, I'm sure you're thinking, but wait a second, we stopped the killing of seals. Well, there's a long history. Because of the overfishing of cod by the Canadian fishing industry in eastern Canada, in the Atlantic Ocean, in Newfoundland's northeast coast, the cod population declined to such a degree that the government stepped in the late 1980s to impose severe restrictions on commercial fishing. But it was too late. They didn't step in soon enough. And because of overfishing, the fishery collapsed, never recovered, and never will. The ecosystem has changed such that it's no longer able to support codfish. Now, what does all of this have to do with seals? Scapegoating the seals for the collapse of the cod fisheries, fishermen demanded a kill. They demanded that they kill the seals who they accused of eating all of the cod. And in 2003, the Canadian government bowed to pressure from the fishing industry and ordered the massacre of hundreds of thousands of seals, declaring war on the seals in hopes that massive seal kills will bring back the cod and keep their disgruntled fishermen working. Now, cod is actually not a major food source of the harp and hood seal diet. These are the seals being killed up in Newfoundland. Further, recent evidence suggests that killing seals contributes to bacterial infestation on the ocean floor, which leads to hypoxia, a condition in which patches of ocean lose all the dissolved oxygen and are unable to sustain cod or fish or marine life of any kind. But these facts have been completely brushed aside by the Canadian Department of Fisheries and Oceans in their efforts to justify and continue the slaughter. During the three-year period of 2003 to 2005, the Canadian Department of Fisheries and Oceans, DFO, allowed a kill quota of 975,000 baby and adult harp seals and 30,000 adult hood seals. When the struck and lost seals are included, these are the animals who've been hit but lost in the icy waters, the total kill exceeds 1 million, making this the largest marine mammal slaughter in the world. To find as many avenues as possible to profit from the annual government-subsidized slaughter, Canada exports seal skins, fur skins, pelts, and leather, seal oil, and seal meat. Unfortunately, the demand for seal pelts has skyrocketed, especially in Europe, as seal fur becomes trendy and fashionable. Though seal meat isn't doing as well, the Canadian government is trying to find markets for the bodies of the skinned seals. The kill continues to this day. Even as I write this, the quota for the 2007 massacre is 270,000, and as I record this, 213,000 have been killed this year. Visit protectseals.org for more information about this annual slaughter. Finally, while we're talking about byproducts, effects of the fishing industry, there's another byproduct of consuming aquatic animals that went under the radar screen when an earthquake and subsequent tsunami in Southeast Asia destroyed lives and communities at the end of 2004. You probably remember this. Over 200,000 human lives were lost and uncounted non-human lives. Experts agree that the destruction of coral reefs and mangrove trees played a significant role in the destruction caused by the tsunami. In many countries across Asia, including Indonesia, Sri Lanka, and Bangladesh, mangroves stood all along the coasts in shallow waters. They offered protection against things like tsunamis. Over the last 20 to 30 years, they were cleared for shrimp were prawn farms. The destruction of the coast was also due to the building of large resorts where they should never have been built because these mangroves and coral reefs were destroyed. And this is one of the reasons why the tsunami was as destructive as it was. Of course, there are now efforts to rebuild the shrimp farms, and we'll see if we learn anything from the disaster. I'm a little skeptical, considering the fact that worldwide shrimp farming has grown at an annual average of over 18% since 1970, and it's the single most valuable internationally traded seafood product worldwide, valued at an estimated $50 to $60 billion at the point of retail. So the cost of our consumption of aquatic animals is extremely high, not just to the target species who were living perfectly lovely lives before we came along to snatch them out of their homes, but also to the non-target species and entire ecosystems. And this is just one aspect of this issue. We have yet to talk about all the others, including factory farm raising fish, the pollution in the ocean, the fishing of smaller fish to feed the larger fish we raise to eat, the toxins such as mercury in the fish we consume when we eat their bodies, the research that supports the fact that fish feel pain, the human health concerns of eating fish, the problems with catch and release sport fishing, and more. I can do an entire podcast on salmon alone and the many problems with consuming it, from the problems with farm-raised Atlantic salmon, which is probably one of the worst choices we could make. The fish are raised in cramped pens in the ocean. Their waste pollutes the surrounding water and spreads disease to wild fish. In the Pacific, escaped farm-raised salmon also compete with wild fish for food and interfere with spawning. Furthermore, salmon are fed a diet of fish meal tinted to give their flesh that characteristic salmon pink color, which further depletes the ocean food chain. Wild Washington and Oregon salmon is a poor choice since overfishing and habitat destruction have endangered many species. Anyway, just some food for thought before we return to this topic. And do revisit the podcast episode. I think it was called Leave Out the Middle Cow or something, Leave Out the Middleman. There was an episode where we talked about getting our nutrition from the plant sources. For instance, when we talk about omega-3s, not from fish, but from plant sources, because don't forget the fish have to consume the fatty acids from the phytoplankton, from the algae. If they don't consume it, they don't have it in their flesh, which means humans aren't getting it. So please get your omega-3s from flax seeds, from flax oil, from walnuts, and then obviously from supplements that are also available. Until next time, consider this. A recent issue of Fish and Fisheries magazine cited more than 500 research papers on fish intelligence, proving that fish are smart, that they can use tools, and that they have impressive long-term memories and sophisticated social structures. The introductory chapter said that fish are, quote, steeped in social intelligence, pursuing Machiavellian strategies of manipulation, punishment, and reconciliation, exhibiting stable cultural traditions, and cooperating to inspect predators and catch food. With that in mind, my hope is that each of us questions what criteria we use to determine the value of an animal's life, to determine who deserves to be spared pain, to determine who has the right to live free from harm, free from suffering, free from premature and unnecessary death. May our hearts be large enough to include not only those with whom we can identify, with whom we can communicate. May our compassion be unbiased enough to embrace those who don't look like us, those who don't sound like us. May we be as fascinated by our differences as we are consoled by our similarities. We don't need to travel to other planets to find interesting, exotic, different life forms. They exist right here, right now, on the earth and in the sea. We would recognize them if we could just get out of the way long enough to look through a different lens. Thank you again, Arbon International, for your generous sponsorship. Check them out at www.karencunningham.myarbon.com. Contact Karen also for your free gift, or if you're looking for a Plan B career move, she can tell you more if you write to karencunningham@myarbon.com. Thank you all for your time and for your support. May your daily choices be a reflection of your own values. This is Colleen with Compassionate Cooks. Thanks for listening.